cards. And when those real ID cards are issued, and heaven forbid that they ever are, you will be under such control and scrutiny that you will be unable to speak out to government, because you'll be tracked so carefully that if you do, you will probably be going off to a forced labor camp. So, again, I urge you to do so as soon as you possibly can. In the meantime, we wish you the very best for the holidays. Goodbye.
Gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
www.themicroeffectlive.com.
Do not be distracted by the beautiful celebrities.
TheMicroEffectLive.com.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Ooh, could that be email coming my way?
You have 1,200 messages.
Are neglected because people don't want to take the time to really study what our founding documents said. But if you don't study them and you don't understand them, what happens is the evildoers who are ever at work will take away our God-given rights, or actually violate our God-given rights. Thomas Jefferson put it this way: in questions of power, then, let no more be said of confidence in man, but bind him down with the chains of the Constitution. He knew, as well as our other founders, clearly understood that all men are sinners, even the best of human beings, even the Christian who is progressively being sanctified. They're not to be trusted with unlimited power, because any human being with unlimited power is going to abuse that power. Therefore, they had to be chained down. The people in government have to be chained down by the Constitution to do only that which that Constitution permits them. Kind of like when you put a dog out on a chain, you know, the chain goes so far and then it yanks the collar or the neck of the dog, and the dog cannot go any further than the circle. If you peg that chain in the middle of the yard, there's a circle in which that dog can run and no further, because the chain holds them in place. And that's exactly what our Constitution was designed to do in our country. And when people study, as we have here, and look at the Constitution itself, what it says, what it was intended to do, and you look at the government that we're suffering under today, you say, what in the world happened? How in the world did what was a limited federal government with specific delegates, how did that come this gargantuan Leviathan government that we have in Washington, D.C. today? And what happened is a changed view of reality, a changed view of truth that took place over time. If you were to ask our framers, you know, what their view of law was, they would tell you that law, just like truth, can never change. Law is absolute. Law is God-ordained. In the Old Testament, of course, the biblical view of truth and law comes from the Old Testament Hebrew word emeth, which is a fixed and unchanging established truth that meets the test of time. In the New Testament, they use the Greek word aletheia, and that Greek word is used with identification close to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the way, the aletheia, the truth, and the life, John 14, verse 6. And we know that Jesus never changes. As Hebrews 13, 8 says, he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so our founders, from the biblical worldview, understood that truth and law cannot and must not change. They're absolute, God-ordained. And then, of course, they read many of the scholars and philosophers of their day who were basing their writings from an exposition of Scripture. For example, Sir Isaac Newton, and he would have taught and did teach our founders that the universe is governed by fixed and absolute God-ordained laws, the scientific laws such as the laws of motion or gravity or mathematics that says 2 plus 2 equals 4 today, tomorrow, and 1,000 years from now. It does not change. And the rest of the laws of the universe, laws of chemistry and physics, all of these physical laws of the universe are paralleled by the Creator giving us moral laws for the governance of man, such as the Ten Commandments. And so Newton was very clear on that, and our founders understood and accepted that worldview.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at berkeywater.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
The disciples asked Jesus in Matthew 24, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, disease, and earthquakes in many places." We are living in this time of Earth's history. Many people are trying to understand the climactic world events in light of human wisdom. But without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. 2 Peter says, "We have a more sure word of prophecy, and you do well if you take heed. But first know this, that no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation." The Bible says, "We'd like you to receive this new offer, Packet B, The Unholy Alliance." These materials document the global leaders, political and religious, behind the scenes. You will receive information regarding America and prophecy, tyrants and wars, the New World Order, and much more. As always, these materials are shipped to you at no charge. Please call 1-888-211-1715. That's 1-888-211-1715. And ask for Packet B.
This is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and we had a little of a bit of a mix-up there. And actually, for this hour, we're going to have Dr. Dennis Cuddy. We're going to have Pastor David Whitney for the next hour. So with us from Raleigh, North Carolina, is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dennis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, we're going to be talking about Dr. Cuddy's latest article, which appears in newswithviews.com. So why don't you pick up the story there, Dennis?
Okay. I'd like to, first of all, give the one of the reasons why this particular article, the North American Union and the Larger Plan, I titled it, is important. Sometimes we just discuss articles and people seem to think it's only an inside story and it's important information, but not that many people know about it. And what you have to understand is there's a concerted effort to undermine this type of information. And it's reached rather high levels. When you get to Newsweek, for example, which is probably right there, if not ahead of Time, right there next to Time in weekly readership, you know that something is afoot. And so the reason this type of information that I have in this article is important is there was a Newsweek column just a couple of weeks or so ago, December 1st issue, by Gretel Kovach, K-O-V-A-C-H. And it was titled, Highway to Hell? Subtitle, Ron Paul's Worked Up About U.S. Sovereignty. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's important to give you a few highlights. She starts the article by saying, Ron Paul wants you to be scared. There's a conspiracy in the land, what he calls a conspiracy of ideas. She goes on and says it's some shadowy scheme to have this superhighway between Mexico and Canada across the U.S. She refers to a debate which he recently had where he's explaining this unholy alliance and so on. And the ultimate goal isn't just this superhighway, but an integrated North American Union, complete with a currency, a cross-national bureaucracy, and virtually borderless travel within the Union, end quote. And then the first sentence of her very next paragraph is, and she's writing this, only it's not true, she says. And then she goes on and says how Jerome Corsi is the purveyor of this idea, and she mentions his book. And she even throws in Human Events, a conservative newspaper, as poo-pooing this. And she says, like all good conspiracies, there's some strange stew of fact and fiction. And she goes on and talks about the Trans-Texas Corridor. She says, yes, that's true. It's been scaled back, but yes, that's going to happen. And then she talks about this shadowy group, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And she then simply says on the SPP website, they have this myth versus fact portion, which she says, quote, dispels tales about a secret plan to build a superhighway. And then she goes into the contractor, Centra Zachary, that's constructing this Trans-Texas Corridor, and says an official transportation commissioner, Rick Williamson, down in Texas, when people bring this up, and is this part of the NAU and the Amero? She mentions this Amero is the currency. He doesn't know what they're talking about, and so forth. And so she spends a lot of time here trying to undermine this, but she really doesn't do any basic research. Now either the woman is incompetent, or by the incompetent I mean she doesn't even do some sort of simple research, even if she doesn't want to look on the Internet. Even if she doesn't want to take Jerome Corsi's word or mine or Dr. Stan's for this, it's very, very, very simple to get some government officials to acknowledge what's going on. But apparently she's either so incompetent she couldn't do that, or they know perfectly well what's going on and they want to undermine any opposition to it. And so with that as the background, what I do is begin my piece by saying, in order to bring about a North American Union, the public first has to be conditioned to think of themselves as North Americans. And in that regard, I don't say, well, on somebody's blog spot, they felt that. Any of your listeners know that I tend to quote people who are well-respected in this regard. And so here I quote Thomas Donahue, President and CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, where he says, quote, for CEOs, North America is already a single market, and business decisions are no longer made with a Mexico strategy or a Canada strategy, but rather with a North American strategy. I think it's pretty clear now that it no longer makes sense to talk about U.S. competitiveness and Mexican competitiveness or competitiveness of Canada. We are all in this together, we as North Americans, end quote. So the first point is there's a publicity regarding the way we should think about things in terms of business, for example. Also relevant to the process is there's a publication, and it's called a North North American Integration Monitor. Remember, she was poo-pooing this idea of North American integration. Well, this thing has been around since 2002, 5 years, and it's by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a very influential insider group. And what they're going to do, CSIS, is they're soon going to publish, and I talked to them, they've agreed to send it to me, their final document on their, quote, North American Future 2025 project. I guess Ms. Kovac thinks that's fiction, too. The project has, quote, an emphasis on regional integration, end quote. And they say they chose the year 2025, quote, on the basis of data presently available on overall global projections, end quote. Now, what's going on is they have seven closed-door roundtable sessions, seven. And they've been looking at the methodology of global and North American projections. Now, remember, it's not just North American, it's global, because this is fitting a larger global plan. And they've also looked at labor mobility, energy, the environment, security, competitiveness, and border infrastructure and logistics. Golly, you know, that sounds sort of like a bureaucracy in the making to me. Apparently, she missed this. Next, I referred as Zbigniew Brzezinski. A very prominent person, Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, the first director of the Trilateral Commission. Now, he just happens to be a CSIS counselor. And you may recall at Mikhail Gorbachev's first State of the World Forum back in 95, 12 years ago, Brzezinski said, quote, "We cannot leap into world government through one quick step. The precondition for eventual and genuine globalization is progressive regionalization, because by that we move toward larger, more stable, more cooperative units," end quote. And so this is one reason the CSIS project has an emphasis on regional integration. Now, what you need to know is Brzezinski went on. I actually have a tape of him talking at that 1995 session. And if you listen to it, it goes on for a while, and he's talking about the New World Order, uses that term. And he actually goes on to describe these regions that would be formed. And, for example, he says Israel and the Palestinians would be part of a Middle Eastern region. And then he describes how communist China would be brought into an Asian region. And then he describes that Iran would be part of a Central Asian region that would have important oil and gas line gas pipelines constructed. This was sort of, his speech was a prelude to his 1997 book, The Grand Chessboard, where he's laying out, you know, this Caspian oil in Iran and Afghanistan and the Muslim resistance and all that sort of thing. So he's broaching the subject here in 95. Now, it's worth remembering at this point, because these people know what words mean, it's worth remembering that in Stalin's January 1913 address in Vienna, he advocated national loyalties becoming subservient to regions. And just 3 years later, Lenin, in 1916, proclaimed, quote, "The aim of socialism is not only to abolish the present division of mankind into smaller states and all national isolation, not only to bring the nations closer to each other, but also to merge them," end quote. Now, what does this got to do with Brzezinski? Well, if any of you have read his book, Between Two Ages, of 1970, this is one of the books Rockefeller looked at, David Rockefeller, when he had Brzezinski become the first director of his Trilateral Commission beginning in 73. You'll know that in that book, Brzezinski praised Marxism, and he claimed that, quote, "The nation-state is gradually yielding its sovereignty," end quote. Apparently, Ms. Kovac missed that, too. Now, I go on myself talking about this. One aspect of American sovereignty that is being yielded is ownership of American companies by Americans. And the statistics are fairly alarming. In the first 9 months of this year, 69 companies in New England alone have been sold to foreign buyers. Nationally, it hits the big time. The French company Alcatel bought Lucent Technologies in the U.S. last year. And you get an idea of what's going to happen with these things, because in September, just a couple months ago, they announced, Alcatel announced, it will be cutting thousands of jobs. That's what they do. Buy up a company, cut the American workforce, shift things overseas. Now, relevant to this process, again, I try and, you know, quote reputable people, a fellow named Alan Tunnelson, he's a research fellow at the U.S. Business and Industry Council. He said foreign companies are, quote, acquiring control over the most dynamic pieces of the American economy, and they're acquiring control over America's future, end quote. And we could pick up after the break.
We certainly will, and I think it's so important people understand that what they want to do is get the people so involved in economics and buying things and goods that they'll be willing to give up their sovereignty for financial advantage. These will be trading groups, and then when everybody has given up their sovereignty, then they'll create their one-world government. That's what it's about.
Ted Anderson from Midas, December 19, 2007. Gold, 830-ounce gold coins can be purchased for $824.47, $406.35 for half, $203.18 for quarter. That's $824.47, $406.35, and $203.18. For years, Ron Paul has taken the position to uphold constitutional rights. He's been branded by special interest groups as doctrinal, refusing to bend his values. I can only imagine the pressure applied by Congress as he stands alone for these principles. He has given up a medical career for this. Ron Paul is running for president. The ideas of strong currency, ending the war, defending the Constitution, and protecting civil liberties are catching on. As a thank you, GCNLive.com, Midas Resources, and I would like to send you a free copy of the Ron Paul Family Cookbook. Call 800-686-2237 for your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237. I hope his values are touching your heart as deep as they are mine. That's 800-686-2237. Thanks again for supporting Ron Paul.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place. Surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
This is Elizabeth Border, author of the two books set, America Attacked and Chaos and Chemtrails. I wrote these books because I believe that every American should have the vital chemtrails research info. I was much heartened and encouraged when a radio listener recently wrote me, quote, "You are truly a great writer, so clear and powerful and thorough in your communication. You have the strength to forge ahead in the midst of darkness, and you also believe in the power of goodness and truth. I hope you listeners will order these crucial books. Send your check for $32 post-paid to Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. $32 to Radio Liberty, Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. Or call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Well done. Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest today is Dr. Dennis Cutting. We're talking about this move towards globalization by simply having these local groups go, let's give up their sovereignty, the European Union. Countries give up their sovereignty in the name of trade, and before long they realize they have a parliament, they've lost control of their government, and no longer do they have, you know, representative government. They have a massive bureaucracy, a Soviet-style bureaucracy that controls them. The same thing is happening here in the United States. They're lying to the American people. There is a plan to unite the three countries here in the North American part of the continent. You can certainly get into the background of this. Council on Foreign Relations has actually published a book on building this North American community. Understand, this is not imaginary. It's not paranoia. You're only paranoid when you imagine people are against you, and there really are people who hate America, who hate our sovereignty, who want to establish a one-world government, a one-world religion, under the control of a one-world leader. With that as the background, Dr. Dennis Getty.
Okay, and the takeoff that I had on this, remember, is this Newsweek article. They apparently thought it was extremely important to undermine the opposition to this effort by poo-pooing it as some kind of ridiculous conspiracy theory that is not true. At least that's Gretel Kovacs' take on it in her long article. And what I was saying was one way in which we are gradually yielding our sovereignty is fewer and fewer American companies are being owned by Americans. And I mentioned Alan Tonelson, a research fellow at the U.S. Business and Industry Council's concern, and he's no, you know, right-wing conspiracy nut. Also relevant is an assessment by Donald Klepper-Smith. He's the chief economist at DataCore Partners. And which he said what happens is when these decisions by companies are made overseas rather than here, he said it raises, quote, it raises some red flags and some real questions about our independence, end quote. And he's exactly right. I began my piece by talking about the conditioning process that is to cause Americans to accept this idea of a North American Union. And what you look for are people who are putting forth, this is a good thing, and I give one example. A fellow named Harry Regner, he wrote a letter to a newspaper just a couple of months ago, October 15, titled "An Economic Union Would Be Beneficial." And he was pointing out there's large oil reserves in both Canada and Mexico that could be useful to the U.S., as well as Mexico's excess manpower, who, as immigrants, would help support U.S. and Canadian economic growth. And who was this fellow? Well, he was an advisor on foreign trade to the U.S. Department of Commerce for quite a while, from 1984 to 94. Now, what's important about that is it crosses administrations. He's with the Reagan administration, the Bush administration, and into the Clinton administration. Remember, these people, the power elite, they don't know Democrat from Republican. Those things are rather irrelevant to them. They have a similar mindset. And in his letter, Regner's letter, he said, quote, "A North American economic union would provide the free flow of capital and labor across national borders needed to address many of these aforementioned concerns that I said about oil and labor." Now, end quote. Often, these regional economic integration initiatives, They are the predecessor to a type of union. It's first economic and then a formal union. And often it's argued on the basis of free trade because that sounds good. Well, what I do next is I quote a fellow named John Fonte, F-O-N-T-E. He's with the Hudson Institute. John actually was in the office right next to me in the U.S. Department of Education when I was in Washington, and we knew each other rather well. And he was at this this discussion group up in Washington. And when the subject came up, he explained that the concept of regional economic arrangements or trading blocks is actually contrary to the idea of free trade, even though they're arguing this is part of free trade. And so I say, for example, in a North American Union, there would be trading arrangements among the three nations. You know, they would have agreements, certain products go to certain countries in certain amounts, and, you know, you'd have some sort of formal arrangements here. And if you do that within a trading block, in a union of three countries, and then that could actually limit the ability of the U.S. to trade freely with other nations outside of the trading bloc. So this idea that we have to have this North American Union on the basis of free trade is actually contrary to fact.
Okay, we're going to be back here in just a minute with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Understand that they're lying to the American people. The last thing they want is for you to realize you're going to give up your sovereignty, you're going to give up your freedom, you're going to give up everything you own. And, of course, this is a plan by the elite who control both political parties to destroy America and create this one world government.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of the counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, rocket trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Daily, we're warned about E. coli, SARS, bird flu, MRSA, and influenza. Dr. Gregory Poland, Director of Vaccine Research at the Mayo Clinic, said it's absolutely positively going to happen. But did you know there is no plan to combat a major outbreak in this country? Introducing the Hazard Decontamination Kit. Hazard Kit contains a fog applicator, Tyvek protective suit, gloves, mask, and enough concentrate to make 32 gallons of fogging liquid, and it's so easy to use. Doesn't your family and business deserve the insurance of having your own hazard kit? Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 and order your hazard kit today. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt says any community that doesn't prepare because they think the federal government will be able to rescue them will be tragically disappointed. Only $269 plus shipping and handling. Isn't your family worth it? Call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com and get your own weapon of mass protection.
Stand back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking about this plan to create these regions that eventually can be all merged together. And, of course, Dr. Cuddy's been talking about this article in Newsweek. Remember, Newsweek is published by the people who control the Washington Post, and they're part of the Bilderberger Group. At least Katharine Graham was until she retired, and now her son is there. But they're all part of the elite who rule the world. And the last thing they want you to do is to know the truth, and certainly they would not want Ron Paul to be seriously considered for the presidency, because ordinarily they control both the Republican and the Democrat candidates. States. So you get the chance not to vote for the candidate of your choice, but the candidate of their choice. Well, Dr. Cuddy, Sydney, you can get his articles at newswithviews.com. We carry a number of his books. If you'd like them, you can certainly go to our website and look them up. Excellent books on mental health and the New World Order, the educational plan for the New World Order, with Sydney giving you this whole sequence of ideas that have been used in our educational system. But Dr. Cuddy is a prolific writer. We recommend you go to News with Views and pull down his articles and put them into some sort of a loose leaf binder and check out his documentation, because you'll find it is always accurate. Will you go ahead and pick up the rest of the story there, Dennis?
Okay. As I said, the Newsweek article is a major attempt to undermine Ron Paul's and others, Jerome Corsi and mine, and Dr. Stan's emphasis on this process leading us towards the North American Union. And President Bush, of course, being a fine puppet of these people, recently made a similar attempt that this is all nonsense. On August 21, at the concluding press conference for the Security and Prosperity Partnership, it was in Montebello, Quebec, there was a Fox News reporter, Brett Baer, and he asked if the SPP is a prelude to a North American Union similar to the European Union, and if there were plans to build some kind of superhighway connecting all three countries. And President Bush replied, quote, "If you've been in politics as long as I have, you get used to that kind of technique where you lay out a conspiracy and then force people to try to prove it does not exist," end quote. Well, the truth, of course, if any of these people bothered to check, is that the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are being connected by four trade corridors. There's websites showing this stuff. And on, in case you think, well, you know, anybody can set up their own website to allege anything, I go on and I show November 20th, this is less than a month ago, this year, the Lieutenant Governor John Harvard of Manitoba delivered what they call there a speech from the throne, in which he said the following. Now remember, this is the Lieutenant Governor. I would imagine George Bush and Gretel Kovac don't think he's an idiot. So this is what he said, quote, "Manitoba has been working with the Canadian government and the state governments in the U.S. to protect and enhance our access to key trade markets. In response to U.S. border security measures, Manitoba will begin offering an enhanced driver's license as an affordable and secure form of identification for travelers." Now get that. Now, this is coordinated. There's going to be this driver's license. It'll be enhanced, you know, holograms and so forth, as part of an ID system. Okay, he goes on. "The new license will be available in the fall of 2008. Manitoba is also taking a major role in the development of a mid-continent trade corridor, connecting our northern port of Churchill with trade markets throughout the central U.S. and Mexico." Remember that, throughout the central U.S. He continues, "To advance the concept, an alliance has been built with business leaders and state and city governments spanning the entire length of the corridor." See, there's coordination all up and down the corridor. He concludes, "When fully developed, the trade route will incorporate an inland port in Winnipeg with pre-clearance for international shipping," end quote. Now, unless this guy is some sort of idiot, anybody reading that would see that there is this effort to connect the three countries by this trade corridor, and it's coordinated. So what you have to do is remember what these things are. The SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership, is part of what I said before, this sort of conditioning process that goes step by step. And it's part of the power elite's plan for what I've called a techno-feudal, F-E-U-D-A-L, fascist world government, because it's a partnership. That's why they call it a partnership. For years, the American people and their leaders have been conditioned to accept educational and other partnerships as solutions to their problems. All of these, it's not just in trade, it's education in many areas. They'll say, well, let's have this partnership. For example, City governments are often complaining they don't have any money. You know, oh, we don't have funds. And so what happens is they're approached by corporations, transnational corporations, or their related private foundations, you know, Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, so on, with plans and funds to, let's say, improve education. And the city leaders say, oh, wonderful, we'll have this partnership, we won't have to come up with all the money, you're putting up half the funds, you've got the idea, you've got the plans, yes, we accept. What that does is it conditions the people eventually to accept government corporate rule. Now, if you look in the dictionaries, that's a form of socialism known as fascism. And it will probably, I think, be the type of world government the power elite plans ultimately to bring about and control. In this type of government, the power elite will control politicians who will become government leaders, who will then promulgate laws, rules, and regulations that will be favorable to certain transnational corporations controlled by them, by the power elite, and it will, they will be unfavorable to any possible competition to those select corporations. That's how the system's going to work. So why, given all this, did President Bush ridicule Bret Baier's question, especially since we already know that there are 47 Mexican consulates across the U.S. In fact, Dr. Stan, when he introduced me, said he's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. We have one. It's up north of me here. There's a Mexican consulate in Raleigh. There's 47 of these things. Now, you know, why are they doing this? Well, one commentator who apparently is onto this, a very rare person, as I said, Newsweek wants to poo-poo this, is Lou Dobbs with CNN. And he wrote a column a couple of months ago called Beware the Lame Duck. And in there he said, quote, although many conservatives refuse to accept the reality, George W. Bush is a one-world neoliberal who drove budget and trade deficits to record heights. President Bush has pressed hard for the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the first step toward a North American Union that will threaten our sovereignty. The administration has permitted American businesses to hire illegal aliens, encourage the invasion of 12 million to 20 million illegal aliens, and has given Mexico and corporate America dominion over our borders and our immigration policy. The assault on our national sovereignty continues. The president is urging the Senate to act favorably on our accession to the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. That treaty will submit the United States to international tribunals largely adverse to our interests, and dispute resolution mechanisms are stacked against us, the U.S. That treaty would undermine our national sovereignty and act as a backdoor for global environmental activists to direct U.S. policy, end quote. That's Lou Dobbs of CNN. And I conclude that paragraph by saying, fortunately, in Congress, there's a House Concurrent Resolution 40, which states, quote, expressing the sense of Congress that the United States should not engage in the construction of a North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, superhighway system, or enter into a North American Union with Mexico and Canada, end quote. So there is a resolution that the Congress can vote for that would at least express the sense of Congress that this is a bad idea. Now, if I were there at Montebello, and if I could have followed up Bret Baier's question with one of my own, here's what I would have asked. I would have said, President Bush, will the massive 10-lane road, Trans-Texas Corridor, funded by Centro of Spain, and to be built by Zachry Construction of Texas, will that come to a screeching halt at Oklahoma's border? End quote. That's what I would have asked him. And that's Ms. Kovac in Newsweek should have asked herself. She looked at it. She knew about Centra. She knew about Zachry. She knew about the Trans-Texas Corridor. She knew it was going forward. It had only been scaled back a little bit. It's only logical that she would have said, well, what happens to this thing? Does it, you know, does it just stop? Do all the cars sort of pile up there at the Oklahoma border? So that's a logical question. They couldn't obviously be merged into a small road. You would not start construction on such a project unless you coordinated with Oklahoma and succeeding states to the north. I mean, that would be sheer, you know, stupidity. So it's obvious. Well, who are the players involved? I say, by the way, Sentra is legally represented in Texas by, guess who? Leading Republican presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani's law firm, Bracewell and Giuliani. They're in Houston and several offices in Texas, but they also just happen to have an office in Dubai. Remember the Dubai ports that were about to take over operation of a number of America's largest ports? Could it be that this is one reason Rudy Giuliani is favored by the elite? And then I go on. Perhaps before President Bush was too critical of people warning about a North American Union, he should have at least read what Mexico's president, last president, Vicente Fox, said on May 16th of 2002 at Club 21 in Madrid. Now, this is 7 years ago. You'd think President Bush and Gretel Kovac could have been aware of this. He said, President Fox, quote, "Eventually, our long-range objective is to establish with the U.S., but also with Canada, our other regional partner, an ensemble of connections and institutions similar to those created by the European Union," end quote, or as Dr. Stan says, Gorbachev calls it the European Soviet. So here's the president of Mexico, 5 years ago, talking about this involving institutions. You know, that's like a bureaucracy. When you set up processes and rules and programs and you have this regional partner and they're connected, that looks like a partnership on its way to a union to me. But apparently these people miss that. Another thing I might have asked President Bush at that press conference is why on September 6th of this year, at night, you know, not many people looking, 9 p.m., did he open all U.S. highways to Mexican trucks? Earlier that same day, U.S. Representative Peter DeFazio said President Bush was, you know, blank bent on getting Mexican trucks into the U.S. one way or the other by stealth. And currently, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, if you go look at their website, they list 10 Mexican carriers, which have, you know, lots of trucks each, that are approved to transport goods throughout the U.S., and there's nearly 40 more Mexican carriers that will soon join them on that list. So you're going to have this massive number of these Mexican trucks. And so what I ask is, will all of the Mexican truck drivers be stopped at the border to see if they can read road signs in English, if they have criminal backgrounds? Will they be asked how long they've already been driving that day? And that's important because U.S. law prohibits more than 10 consecutive hours. So, you know, when they hit the border, how long have they been driving? Well, I don't think they'll be asked any of those things for the most part, because no more than 2% right now, no more than 2% of Mexican trucks entering the U.S. today are inspected anyway. And what might they be carrying? Well, many of those trucks will be a danger to American safety. They're not as well constructed, not as well managed. The requirements are not as great. Now, there is this process where the carrier is supposed to be reviewed and so forth. But still, as I said, are you going to stop each one of these at the border and ask them all those things? I don't think so. What could they be used for? Smuggling drugs? Illegal aliens? Maybe terrorists into the U.S.? And we're only looking at 2% of them. And why is this a problem? Well, many countries deliberately release their criminal elements into the U.S. Most Americans aren't aware of this, and they often come across the Mexican border. Now, what happens if the criminals are caught? Well, our federal government asks the home country, you know, to take them back. What if they refuse? Well, what happens is we release them into American society. It's incredible. And now our government knows how to solve this problem. And we did it with at least one country, I believe, down in South America, Guyana, where we stopped issuing visas to people from that country. And sure enough, that worked. And then we went back, you know, and started giving visas. And once again, that country stopped taking their own criminals back. So we know how to do this. But most of the time, we refuse to take such action, our government does. So what I ask is, ask yourself why our government would release murderers, rapists, arsonists, and other criminals into our society to commit violent crimes against us. You know, why would we do that? Think about that. Think about why our government would do that. Okay, now returning to Brett Baer's question to President Bush about the SBP being a prelude to a North American union similar to the EU, what would we get if we became like the EU? And you got to remember, the EU has certain characteristics of fascism. There's a woman, Mrs. Kitty Workman. She's a survivor of Hitler's reign and also Soviet rule afterwards. She was in Austria. And she recently returned to Europe, and she interviewed many of the senior citizens there. And what did they tell her? They informed her that they were told that conversion to the euro would bring great prosperity via free trade and lower prices for goods and so on. In reality, what she found is their money was greatly devalued, just like ours is being. And they're now living there in Europe, many of them the seniors, on welfare and food stamps. Unemployment is in Europe is very high. And so what happens is they bring in the guest workers. Often Muslim guest workers are brought in. And that results in the population already there having severe problems finding employment. And the people are getting very angry, she said. Now, in terms of what is planned for Americans relevant to the EU and the euro, Vicente Fox, again, former president of Mexico, he was on CNN's Larry King Live show just a couple of months ago. And he explained that what he and President Bush agreed to, quote, is a trade union for all three Americas, end quote. And remember, union. And he suggested eventually there would be a regional currency.
And George Bush is doing everything he can to keep the American people from knowing the truth. You wonder why a Christian would really color the truth. Well, we're out of time, Dennis. Thank you so much, Butch, for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And have a wonderful Christmas.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protection of thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. And if you're watching the Internet, you're finding out that there are shortages of food developing all across the world. The United Nations very, very concerned. A major drought in many of the major countries that are producing the grains, certainly Australia, South America, Africa. And the price of food is just going up through the roof. Wheat is up to $10 a bushel. I can remember when it was $1 a bushel. We felt that $3 a bushel was an amazing amount of money for wheat, and now it's up over $10 a bushel. Understand there are going to be food shortages, and if you haven't laid in a supply of food, you really should. And if you'd like to get a catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. If you have a catalog, and I know that hundreds of you do because we've sent out hundreds of catalogs, and people haven't gotten the things, you need to start laying in food now, whether you get it through us or someplace else. Get your supply of food laid in. And water, and you need to have a water filter, you need to have barrels for your water, you need to have pumps to get the water out of the barrels, you need to have grinders, all of these things, we have them. If you'd like a free catalog, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. Do you know, that's 1-800-544-8927. Do you know how to use your home as a shelter? Well, we have a great DVD. It's called Sheltering in Place. It's quite inexpensive, getting it through Radio Liberty. We have a book put out by the government many years ago, Nuclear War Survival Skills. And then we have a book that tells you how to look after yourself if you can't go down to the store and buy food. It's called Making the Best of Basics. And then, of course, we carry the potassium iodate in case there's a nuclear attack. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you want to lay in a supply of food, we, of course, work as agents for Ready Reserve Foods, and we'll be glad to send you a free catalog. You want to get the DVD on Sheltering in Place, the book on nuclear war survival skills, and, of course, you can learn how to make an inexpensive radiation meter, a little kit that comes with that, but you really want to get the book along with the kit. And then, of course, the book on making the best of basics, the potassium iodate, in case there's a nuclear war and you are radiation and you want to protect your thyroid and your family. All of these items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Why do I think there's going to be a major war? Because I think that the people who work behind the scenes in the secret societies intend to have World War III. And if you doubt that, you'll want to read my February 2006 newsletter, where we simply quote from a book that was channeled to Alice Bailey by the demonic spirit Shua Kul, talking about the war that's coming between Christianity, Judaism, and the Muslim world. And of course, they have 1.25 billion Muslims, and believe me, a war between the West and the Muslim world is going to be a terrible, terrible tragedy. To understand what's really going on, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our talk on the Forbidden Secret. That's the Forbidden Secret. And, of course, our four tape or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, because this goes into Rhonda Burns and, of course, what she has been featuring on Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and with apparently Jim Carrey says that this is the way. Ellen DeGeneres says this is the way. Mr. Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul claims that this is the way to wealth and riches. And in many respects, it really is, but you don't want to go that way because, of course, you'll lose your soul. If you don't believe this sort of thing happens, you need to get the videos we offer, our DVDs. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And then you want to get the DVD on the secret mysteries of America's beginning. And the next one in this series, Riddles in Stone, about the secret societies that were here when America was created. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of the counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, of course, for this hour, we're going to have with us back again Pastor David Whitney, who started last hour and then was good enough to step to one side when we brought our good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy on. Pastor Whitney, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. No problem at all.
Why don't you go right ahead? And, of course, Pastor Whitney is from the Institute of the Constitution, and he's going to be talking about the wonderful Constitution that we have that separates America from all of the nations in the world. And, of course, that's the reason why it is not taught in our schools and not taught in our law schools, why everything is done to ridicule those who talk about the Constitution, even though every one of our legislators and our president and our judges and anybody who is actually elected to any office anywhere in America or takes an oath to uphold our Constitution, our federal Constitution, and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And unfortunately, we have an awful lot of domestic enemies of our Constitution. But nobody wants to call them the subversive, but they truly are. Go right ahead, David.
Well, when our framers talked about truth and they talked about laws, we were starting last hour to share, that was a biblical understanding of what truth and law is, that truth is unchanging. In the Old Testament word, MS, is a fixed, unchanging standard, something that meets the test of time. In the New Testament, they use the Greek word aletheia, and actually that word refers to Jesus Christ when he said, "I am the way, the aletheia, the truth, and the life," in John 14 and verse 6. And we know that as the way, the truth, and the life, Jesus Christ, as Hebrews 13:8 says, is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He never changes. Therefore, truth never changes, and law never changes. That's quite in contrast to what most people believe today. And I was being interviewed by PBS on the issue of guns, and pastors who were encouraging a gun grab, and myself saying, no, God, we have a God-given right to self-defense, and so on. And when
the interviewer was asking me some questions. He said, well, of course truth, or not truth, he said, of course law changes. And I said, no, it does not. Law is fixed, or else it's not law at all. It's some semantic game that you're being played with if law actually changes. Some of the others, in addition to the Bible, some of the other writers who influenced our founders would be Sir Isaac Newton, who we all respect as one of the founding scientific minds. And he studied the universe and spoke about the universe having laws, fixed, absolute, God-ordained laws. What he is and other scientists study, the laws of nature, nature's God, such as laws of motion and laws of gravity and mathematics, that 2 plus 2 equals 4 today, tomorrow, and 1,000 years from now, and 10,000 years from now. It's a law that is fixed. It's unchanging. Just as the laws of chemistry, the laws of physics, all of these are fixed and unchanging. And most people you talk to today would, you know, they would agree with that. So, yeah, okay, you know, gravity's always the same yesterday, today, and so on. But when it comes to the moral laws, that's where they say, ah, well, you know, it's not so fixed. Sir Isaac Newton taught that the moral laws are as fixed as the physical laws of the universe. And when it comes to the, you know, which laws you need to obey, it's actually more important that you obey the moral laws of the universe, that our Creator has built those moral laws into the universe, that they are as fixed and unchanging as the physical laws. Newton himself was actually a devout Christian, and if you look at all of his writings, he wrote extensively on Bible prophecy, and his views of law and physical and moral law were widely embraced by not only Christians, but also deists who did not believe God was actively involved in the universe, but nonetheless, God's law still governed the universe for people who were deists in their belief system. They believed in the laws of nature and nature's God. And in addition to Isaac Newton, our founders, of course, read extensively from Blackstone. He was, if not the direct tutor of many of our founders, the indirect tutor through his laws, commentaries on the laws of England, which was actually sold more copies in the United States, or what was to become the United States, than they did in England. The people here read him extensively, and his thinking that law was an absolute fixed standard greatly influenced their thinking, as did Montesquieu and John Locke, whose second treatise was also very widely read here in the colonies leading up to the War for Independence. All of these taught the same principle, that man's laws must conform to the revealed law of Scripture, law of nature and nature's God, as they were dictated by God himself. That just as if you were to sit down and try to balance your checkbook, and if you suddenly decide, you know, I think the law 2 plus 2 equals 4 is flexible. You know, sometimes it applies, sometimes it doesn't apply, and today I'm not going to use it, I'm going to use 2 plus 2 equals 5.
David, we're going to have to interrupt you here. I've got so interested in what you were saying, I forgot that we have brought on people in the mid-coast of California here. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. He's talking about our Constitution, which is a permanent form of law. Now, of course, you were told, well, the law is what the Supreme Court says. No, it is not. The Supreme Court is only to interpret the meaning of our Constitution. Unfortunately, they have put some wicked people into our court who have an agenda. And instead of doing what they have sworn to do, and that is uphold our Constitution, many times they've been intent upon changing its meaning so that they could transform our society. If you don't like America, you can leave it, or you can stay here and try to change it. But you change it through the process of amendment, not simply by getting people placed into the courts who have a political agenda, and that is the transformation of America and converting us from being a moral Christian nation into being an immoral a nation, which, of course, eventually would result in dictatorship. Go right ahead, David.
So we were saying that if you sat down to try to balance your checkbook and you did not believe that there's an unchanging mathematical law governing the universe, that 2 plus 2 always equals 4, your check would be a disastrous mess, and you'd be quickly bouncing checks and be in a terrible financial mess because you decided you weren't going to obey the laws of the universe. Likewise, the moral laws, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, etc. The moral laws of the universe are just as binding upon man.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, talking about the fact that our law is fixed. It cannot be modified simply because of the time of day or because a judge has a different view of the world. His job is to interpret the law in line with the Constitution, at least if he's a Supreme Court justice or a federal justice, and even many of our state justices. Their job is to certainly abide by the Constitution, but unfortunately, why we have people who have a different worldview. They have a hatred of America, they have a hatred of the freedom we have here, and they certainly have a hatred of God, which is why they've taken God out of our schools and God out of Christmas, and why certainly you can't even have a nativity scene in a public park today. It is this intense hatred of Christianity because it is permanent and because it creates goodness and morality, and there are people who really hate that. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on really begins to make sense. Go right ahead, David.
So if you decide to break the physical laws of the universe, you're going to suffer tremendous consequences. And the individual who decides to break the moral laws of the universe, God's law, they're going to suffer consequences. And a nation, a citizenship that decides together that they're going to violate God's law, they will bring curses upon themselves and disaster and destruction, just as if you jumped off a 10-story building. You might write a piece of legislation that says, we have banned gravity. Gravity no longer exists. The legislature has declared it. The governor has signed it. It is now a reality. No, it's not. And you'd say anybody that would do such a thing is insane. Of course they're insane. They're completely out of touch with reality. And so it is with the moral laws of the universe. It cannot be changed. And when you think of it, in effect, what every legislative piece that comes before a Congress and goes to the president or in a state setting goes before the governor, every piece of legislation is a statement about the moral laws of the universe. It says, this is wrong, this is right. It's wrong to run through a stop sign. Why? You might kill somebody, manslaughter, or you might damage somebody's property, hit their house or their car or whatever. Don't run through stop signs. Why? It's a moral reason you shouldn't do that. It's not, and therefore these laws, every law, is legislating morality. The only question is that legislation in tune with the laws of the universe? If it's not, it's bad legislation. It's no law at all. And essentially that's what our founders said, that any society making laws that violate God's law is going to be a society that falls apart. And ultimately, we see that's what's taking place in our own day. Our society is falling apart and going down because we're rejecting the law of God that he's clearly spelled out for us.
And let me just point out that we've said that sexual promiscuity is perfectly all right. Go right ahead and do it. And yet today in the United States, we have 60 million Americans. That's 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. And then we have all the people with all the other types of viral diseases produced by other organisms as well. 60 million Americans simply with a sexually transmitted viral disease. When I was growing up, you didn't see that. Why? Because we had a moral society, because perversion and pornography and premarital sex were said to be wrong. And today we're teaching our children in school, and they want you to send your children to public school so they can corrupt their morals and their sex education, that premarital sex is perfectly all right. And anybody who wants to teach abstinence education is ridiculed and attacked. What's wrong with abstinence? If you're talking about sexually transmitted disease, it works 100% of the time. You go right ahead there.
Well, our founders believed because truth is fixed, law is fixed, therefore, the Constitution was to be interpreted according to a fixed standard. It was not something that could change over time by judicial fiat or edict. It had to be, the only way you could safely change it, properly change it, was by the amendment process. And the Constitution, furthermore, our founders clearly understood, was to be interpreted by the intent of those who drafted it and ratified it. Listen, for example, to what James Madison, who's rightly called the father of our Constitution, listen to what he said about interpreting the Constitution. If the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation be not the guide in expounding it, there can be no security for a faithful exercise of its powers. He's saying there the only safe way
that your God-given rights are going to be protected is if the Constitution is interpreted only as it was intended by those who penned it and those who ratified it. If you go back to those debates and understand exactly what they meant by the words that they wrote down in the Constitution, that's the only safe way for exercising the powers that the Constitution grants to the federal government. We'll contrast that with the Supreme Court today, as well as other federal courts and the legislature and the executive branch, all three of which are, they just completely reject the text of the Constitution, and they do whatever they please, which our founders said is another word for tyranny. Government that is not bound by any law is an extremely dangerous, tyrannical power that no one is safe from. Their life, liberty, or property are not safe for any such government.
And, of course, that's why they gave us a republic in America rather than a democracy. Mm-hmm. What we have today is a democracy. Whatever the government wants, the majority wants, they do. Under a republic, you're not allowed to do that. You have certain fixed things that you can do, most things you cannot do. The power of the federal government was to be bound down by the chains of the Constitution. Because down through the ages, and it's really you can trace this all the way back to ancient Greece and even before, democracies have always ended up in dictatorship. Remember Adolf Hitler was elected to power in Germany, and once he got in power, he just kept taking a little bit more and a little bit more. Benito Mussolini was elected to power in Italy, you know, by the democratic process. But we never talk about that in America. Why? Because the same thing is happening here, and they don't want the American people to understand that bit by bit, our freedom is being taken away from us. Go right ahead, David.
Well, let's listen to the third president, who's often championed by those who call themselves liberals and so forth, that he was on their side, and if he were alive today, he would be the one that pushing the envelope forward in terms of progressive, all this garbage. Clinton, I understood, when he was speaking to some children at Monticello, said that... If somebody asked him a question, if Jefferson were alive today, what would you do? Basically, he said, I'd resign and have Thomas Jefferson president, because he obviously believed that Jefferson would do what he did, only better. Well, listen to what Jefferson said. The Constitution on which our Union rests shall be administered by me. And by the way, this is in his first inaugural address. He was saying this. Shall be administered by me according to the safe an honest meaning contemplated by the plain understanding of the people of the United States at the time of its adoption. So he's saying the same thing that Madison's saying. There's only one safe way to have a government, and that is a government that abides by the exact understanding of the Constitution that was held by those who ratified the Constitution at the time when it was drafted and subsequently ratified. And sometimes when I talk to people, they say, oh, David, you can't get back into the minds of those people and know what they meant by the words that they put on the paper there in the Constitution. That's impossible. We're 200 years... No. You can easily get back to it. It's very accessible. Things like the Federalist Papers are an excellent way to understand what they meant by the words they said. Madison's debates, Madison's handwritten notes of the constitutional debate gives you a sense of what was taking place and what they meant by each phrase. It is very possible. The people who argue that want us to believe that it's not possible because they want to continue to destroy our constitutional republic and make us believe that it wouldn't work. Well, it worked, and it worked very well. It was the nation that the world looked to with amazement. People like Alexis de Tocqueville came here from France trying to understand what makes this nation great. They understood not just our constitution made it great, but the godly Christian people who saw to it that the constitution was adhered to. That's what made our nation great. And listen to what our first president said, George Washington. If, in the opinion of the people, the distribution or modification of the constitutional powers be in any particular wrong, that is, if somehow in the putting together the Constitution we made a mistake, we did something that really isn't very wise or whatever, okay, let it be corrected by an amendment in the way the Constitution designates. But let there be no change by usurpation. Though this may in one instance be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. As Washington was warning us, don't let anyone in power, whether the judiciary, the legislature, or the executive, don't let anybody in power change the form of government. That is, do not let them violate the Constitution, because if you let them get away with it, let them change the form of government by any other means than by the amendment process, you're going to have your God-given rights violated by that government. And they saw that, of course, in their interaction with King George III in Parliament. The reason they had to go to war was because of those exact violations of the God-given rights that the British Constitution spelled out. But the British government wasn't willing to follow the Constitution. They were violating it. And so the only solution to the problem was to separate and form a new government that would abide by the written word of our Constitution. Well, if you understand all of that, and if you read the Constitution and you look at what's happening today and see that 95 or maybe even more than 95% of everything done by the federal government in Washington, D.C. and around the country and around the world is against the Constitution. That's against the law. It's a violation of the law. Say, how in the world do we get to this place?
Well, I think it's what's so interesting, David, is the fact that there's one political candidate who talks about the Constitution and getting back to it, and that is Congressman Ron Paul. And that is why he is either ignored by the media or demonized by the media or certainly criticized severely. Why? Because he believes in the Constitution. He believes that is the fundamental law of our land, which it is. What is so amazing is all of the other politicians, all of the other candidates for the presidency are on the other side. That is why the media hates Ron Paul, and why the Bilderbergers and the CFR and the Club of Rome and the Trilateralists and the elite hate Ron Paul. Why? Because he wants to adhere to the Constitution, and they hate the Constitution because they want a dictatorship in America. And you can't have one if we adhere to the Constitution, for sure. Well, David, you go right ahead.
Well, just as you spoke of Ron Paul, I'm just reminded that I like to spend time praying for him daily, and I encourage others to pray for him because people like the Bilderbergers, they want to get rid of him. And they've assassinated other presidents and other presidential candidates or attempted assassinations, and they might attempt this as Ron Paul. Certainly gained some steam with breaking all kinds of fundraising records here the last 3 months. So as he gains some steam, he presents a threat to those evil people who want to destroy our Constitution. So we need to pray for him and pray for his staff that God's hand would protect them from these evil people who are following the enemy. Well, when we think about what happened in America, part of it, and again, ideas have an impact. Ideas do make a difference. And it was the idea of several philosophers and a particular writer in biology who brought about a changing view of truth that, unfortunately, many people today hold to this altered view of truth. It's not biblical. It's not wise. For example, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who we could say laid the foundation for the bloodbath that is known as the French Revolution. You can contrast the French Revolution to the American Revolution. The American Revolution was according to God's law. The French Revolution was godless on purpose. They took God out, and it was lawless. They'd kill anybody they chose in that terrible, terrible bloodbath. Well, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, this is his view that influenced some thinkers. He rejected the concept of sin. There's no sin. The exact opposite of what God's Word says, that all men are sinners and have fallen short of the glory of God. Now, secondly, Jean-Jacques Rousseau stressed the goodness of man. He said, all man's not a sinner. Man is essentially good at the core of his being. He's a good creature. And then, of course, thirdly, you have to answer the question with that philosophy, well, then where in the world does evil come from? Because quite obviously, if man is good, you cannot deny that there's evil and plenty of it in the world today. Where did the evil come from? And Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, well, the evil can be blamed on human institutions. Human institutions are the cause of evil, which begs a question, which, by the way, he never answered. And that question is, well, wait a minute. If human institutions are the source of evil, where did the evil come from in those human institutions? Because it was human beings that put them together. It wasn't some outer space creatures that put human institutions together. Human beings formed these institutions. So how did the evil get in there if all human beings are good? Like the old saying that one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. Well, Jean-Jacques Rousseau says, no. The apples don't spoil the whole batch of apples. There's no bad apples. All the apples are good. It's the barrel that the apples are in that spoils the apple. Well, that doesn't work when you realize that the social institutions, the human institutions, the barrel, so to speak, were made by the apples. If there's no bad apples and the apples make the barrel, how did the barrel get bad? Well, of course, he doesn't have any answer to his irrational, illogical system. And, of course, finally, his view of the state was a completely unchristian view. It's an organic view of the state. The state is this entity that is vitally part of the good side of human nature. So his view of government was that it was good, always good. You know, you didn't need to worry about government. It's good because it came out of the goodness of human nature. Well, wait a minute. Our founders, exactly the opposite view of human nature, the exact opposite of human government, which is why the French Revolution is the opposite of the American War for Independence. Well, that Frenchman was succeeded by almost the time that Rousseau
died.
Hold
that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney, and he's simply talking about the difference between the French Revolution and the American Revolution. The American Revolution kept God central to everything. Our founders were mostly dedicated Christians, and nothing was done to try to change the religious beliefs of the people, whereas in the French Revolution, they were going to destroy everything. They were going to destroy the Catholic Church, and they did destroy the Catholic Church. They were going to destroy the government, and they killed, you know, Marie Antoinette and her husband and so many of the nobility. You know, and the revolution in 1789, well, so within just about a decade later, they had another dictator, and his name was Napoleon. And then if you look and see what happened to France, they had revolution after revolution after revolution because they did not have any stability. They did not have anything to believe in other than man. And of course, which man are you going to follow? Are you going to follow, you know, the Napoleon's nephew who became the ruler there? Are you going to follow which one of the people, which king are you going to follow? And, of course, there was always a ruler. And France had at least a half a dozen revolutions in a period of 50 years, whereas America was stable because our nation was built upon God's law. Pick this story up, David.
Which reminds me that if you were to create a bumper sticker from the War for Independence, the famous slogan that was known throughout the colonies was this: no king, but King Jesus. No king but King Jesus. In other words, we want to be following Jesus' law and Jesus' commandments as we form this government.
But so, I think what's so important that this was not to be a theocracy. This was to be a nation where men would be ruled by God personally. In other words, you were not going to have the government telling you what God wanted. Each individual was answerable to God. And that is how you could have a limited central government. And as John Adams said, our form of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not suffice for any other. And that's true. You can't have a limited government unless you have moral people. Unfortunately, we no longer have moral people in America today because they've taken morality and discipline and fear of God out of our schools and out of our churches. Go right ahead, David.
Well, the next major thinker who was born just about the time that Rousseau died was Friedrich Hegel, a German philosopher, and he rejected all concepts of absolute unchanging truth. There were no absolutes, according to Hegel, and that idea actually is irrational because if you say there are no absolute truths, then the next question is, are you absolutely sure that that's true? I mean, you're making an absolute statement of truth when you make that. But so Hegel believed that truth evolves from age to age, and it changes over time, and it's not fixed, and means or the mechanism by which truth is changed from age to age is what he called the dialectic. That is, you have a thesis, the opposite of it is the antithesis, and then the synthesis brings them together. And really, the one-worlders have been using this pattern, and the Marxists are the antithesis of capitalism. So you have capitalism, the thesis, the antithesis, the opposite of it is Marxism. And then the synthesis is going to be the new world order that takes the best of both capitalism and Marxism and puts them into this new totalitarian system of unchecked power in the hands of a few. Well, anyway, Friedrich Hegel was very influential on Karl Marx and those who established the communist philosophy we're following him lockstep, goose step, I guess I should say, as well, because people don't understand that Marx, you know, in his system of communism, really is a system of socialism, just as Nazism was also a system of socialism. It's just a slight differentiation between communism and Nazism. But anyway, moving on to an English philosopher, Auguste Comte, another French philosopher, Auguste Comte, he developed his own religion. He called it positivism. And he said the only meaningful truth is that which can be empirically verified. So if you can measure it with a ruler, if you can put it under a microscope, if you can take your laboratory instruments and somehow analyze it using the basic extension of your five senses, then those truths can be meaningful. All other truth is unmeaningful. It's irrelevant, foolish, actually. And that would render all such concepts of theology, who God is, divine law, natural rights, human dignity, all of these things would be absolutely meaningless under his religion, which is in truth what they are. That they have no meaning. Human beings themselves become reduced down to just mechanistic creatures who, if it's not something you can touch, taste, feel, or smell, those values and those thoughts are absolutely irrelevant to human life.
But of course, on the other side, if there is no God, then life becomes meaningless. Life is certainly quiet desperation. You lived 70 years, you die. Why bother? But of course, there is a God, then it means we're here for a purpose. And that's what the other people, what the atheists, never want to admit. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney. Go right ahead, David.
Oh, and of course, the largest influence on our world today was Charles Darwin. And he actually only popularized the evolutionary model of origin through his book, Origin of the Species. I say popularized because the idea of evolution is not new. He didn't invent it somehow or discover it somehow. He just put a scientific veneer over an idea that's actually a religious idea going back thousands and thousands of years. It's the idea underlying the Hindu concept of reincarnation, that things change and evolve over time and various reincarnations moving things forward and all this. It's really, his theory is a biological version of that. And so he wasn't the first one to propose it, but he was one who popularized it in our modern world because people began to say the scientific method is the access or the way in which we discover all truth, i.e. we reject the Bible and don't listen to what the Bible says about origins. We're going to have to scientifically discover what happened in terms of man's existence and the origin of man's existence. And his theory, of course, holds that there's an overproduction. Animals make too many children, and there's a struggle, therefore, for survival because of limited resources, and the tooth and claw struggle of the jungle results in the survival of the fittest. The strongest of the species will survive, and they'll pass on their genetic makeup to their offspring and so on. And as those fittest survive, the weaker die off, and therefore evolution is kind of guided by this survival of the fittest mechanism. Now, he did not develop this philosophy beyond a biological frame of reference. He just said this is what's happening in the biological world. Others took that and expanded it to everything, and that Herbert Spencer often called Darwin's bulldog because he so avidly went after everybody who disagreed or even questioned Darwinism, and he expanded Darwin's biological model to a philosophy and a worldview, and he wrote extensively trying to show how evolution was the unifying principle affecting and underlying every academic discipline, not just biology, but everything, economics, laissez-faire economics, social Darwinism, so a kind of tooth and claw, cutthroat competition between businesses, and therefore if a business makes some mistakes and it dies, oh, that's a good thing. Let's see those businesses killed and the big monster corporation eat them all up. Well, that's very unlike the economic laws and principles laid down in God's Word, the Bible. It does stress competition, but it stresses moral responsibility on the part of those
who are in the business.
And you hold that thought right there, David, please. All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. Before we go on, I want every one of our listeners to... learn how they can get in touch with the Institute. Certainly, the Institute does support Radio Liberty, but we support... their goal and objective of reintroducing an understanding of the Constitution. Of the magnificence of this idea of a federal government where the power of the government is limited by the chains of the Constitution. There is no federal taxation, and if you read the Constitution, you will find out that the income tax is outlawed by the Constitution. People say it was all modified by the 16th Amendment, but that is subject to a great deal of debate. If you've ever read the 16th Amendment or realize that it was never ratified by the states, understand that we have an amazing Constitution and you need to know about it. So, David, how can people get in touch with the Institute? Do you have your website?
Yes.
What about a telephone number?
And both a website and a telephone number, and people can either call us and order a host kit. And we say that you're not really teaching the Constitution yourself. You're hosting a class on the Constitution. The constitutional law professor, John Eidsmo, teaches 12 lectures, half-hour lectures, and David Barton lectures on the myth of the wall of separation between church and state, and that the key to good government is what our founders said, only electing godly Christians to office who will uphold the original meaning of the Constitution. They won't create new false things out of thin air, but they'll stick with the original meaning of the Constitution. You can order our host kit by calling us toll-free, and that is 866-730-9796 at Institute on the Constitution. Our toll-free number again is 866-730-9796. Or if you prefer to go to our website, we have a web store in which our host kit is offered, as well as many other materials that can help you, train yourself and your friends and family and your church in constitutional issues. A number of DVDs available, as well as a number of other books. But our web store can be accessed by going to our website, and that website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com, all one word, that first phrase, iotconline.com. And we're encouraged, Dr. Stan, is down last month, a graduating class in Central Virginia and all across the country. Classes are being hosted by citizens who are waking up to the reality that we're being lied to in the media, we're being lied to in our schools, including 99% of the law schools also lie to their law students about the meaning of the Constitution. They never study what the framers actually meant by those words, rather than what they only study what the evil ones have done in twisting the words to mean something other than what they originally meant. So nowhere in the world these days will you get the true understanding of the Constitution, which is why we as an institution exist and are devoted to training up millions of Americans about the truth of our founders so that we can take our country back from these violators of the supreme law of our land, the U.S. Constitution.
And I think what's so important is that this is going on all across the country. You're not going to hear about it because the people who control the media, and remember the media, 95% of the major media is controlled by one of five mega corporations. And their job is to control pretty well what you read, hear, and see, and because they control all the major television outlets and most of the major radio outlets and almost all of the major publishing houses. There are a few small independent publishing houses, but very, very few. Of course, they have unlimited money. Working with the Federal Reserve System, they create money out of nothing, and they buy up the media. They buy up the corporations. They buy up the banks. They buy up the universities. They provide professorships and that the man who's the professor there at the university is going to be following their line. And the one thing they hate is the American Constitution and this idea that you can limit the power of government and men can be free. Go right ahead, David.
Well, we were talking about Herbert Spencer, kind of the bulldog for Darwin, and his view of economics was a cutthroat kind of thing. And that's very contrast with God's word, what it instructs businessmen, people engaged in economics, that they're also express compassion to others who are hurting, and they're to have moral responsibility for the actions they take as a businessman. And we see the result of this Darwinian economics in people like Ken Lay and what happened there in Enron, lying and cheating and stealing all the way through. And when you have businessmen who will do anything to win, you don't have a fair economic system. You've got wicked injustice and theft on every side, and that is not what the Bible exhorts. Well, Spencer talked about it not only in terms of economic Darwinism, but psychological Darwinism. You look at Freud's theory. It's basically a Darwinian theory applied to human personality, that you go through these various stages. Oh, there's the oral phase and the anal phase and all this garbage. I mean, if you realize that Freud was just a cokehead, he was a drug addict who was fantasizing about his mother, who in the world would listen to this guy? I call him the fraud Freud, because he is a fraud in everything he says. Yet many people bow down and worship his writings as if somehow they're the final word on what mankind is all about. Along with Freud, of course, was Jungian psychology, which again is a Darwinian type of understanding of how human personality develops. All this stuff completely contrary to what God's word says about the human soul. You need to remember that psychology claims to be the study of the soul, the human soul, or they like to use the word human psyche. It's just the Greek word for soul. Nobody knows the human soul except God, and God has revealed to us in his word what we need to understand about the human soul. Psychology is a fraudulent practice in our society. Well, he also developed the idea of Darwinian sociology, you know, how human beings interact and how communities develop and how changes happen, and Darwinian anthropology. Anybody in anthropology these days has a Darwinian view of how humankind evolved, you know, from, well, you got the Stone Age and then the Bronze Age and da-da-da, on and on. You know, we've bought these lies and these myths that mankind first was living in caves, and then as he became more developed, he got out of the caves, and then he was a hunter-gatherer, and then later, you know, he became agrarian, and all this stuff is Darwinian garbage. You look at the true history we have of ancient peoples, they were vastly advanced, some of them more intelligent and more advanced than we are. We don't even understand some of the things that archaeologists dig up, because the advancements, brain surgery in South America, you don't hear about that, but these people were not primitive, as we're led to believe that the primitive generations have ultimately led to our advanced civilization. And so the whole anthropological field as well became Darwinian in its thinking. And then they even took their wicked philosophy and applied it to the Bible, claiming that the Bible was an evolving document. And, you know, Abraham was a primitive worshiper of some deity, El, and then, oh, it got a little more advanced with Moses, and then the prophets was a little more advanced, and by the time of Jesus and Paul, it was a little more advanced. And, of course, that philosophy says, well, haven't we then evolved and developed further than the Apostle Paul? And the answer would be, oh, sure. And so we put Paul aside and say that he was a misogynist and he was primitive and this and that. I mean, this whole philosophy is aimed at attacking the Bible and undermining the Bible, saying it's no authority that you can listen to. Listen instead to the teachers today, because they're the evolved ones who have the final answers about man's spiritual condition. All of this, of course, is a lie straight from the pit of hell. And, of course, we would expect that these would also attack the whole field of law, which directly affects the field of government. And they had their bulldog was Dean Christopher Columbus Langdell, the first dean of Harvard Law School. And he took the Darwinian theory and applied it to law, and he called it legal positivism, combining Auguste Comte's positive religion, positivism, as well as Darwinian thinking. And this theory replaced what our founders knew about law. from William Blackstone, the natural law theory, all that was thrown out for this new theory of legal positivism, which claimed, first of all, there are no divine absolutes in law. Or if there are, they're completely irrelevant to the modern legal system. Think about that in terms of our Declaration of Independence. The foundation of our country, as clearly stated in the Declaration of Independence, is the laws of nature and nature's God. Well, here, Langdell was saying there's no divine absolutes in law. He threw out the Declaration of Independence right there and said it's irrelevant to modern legal system. Well, wait a minute. If the foundation is irrelevant, then the whole government is irrelevant. The whole thing comes crashing down like a house of cards. Secondly, he taught that law is simply man-made. So law becomes whatever the one who has the most guns says it is. Well, the government has the most guns. It points those guns at you and says, this is a law. You don't obey the law, we're going to throw you in prison. If we have the highest per capita prison population in the world.
About 7 million people in prison, yes. Probation or parole today. The average American doesn't understand. Proportionally, we have far more people in prison than they do in communist China. And an awful lot of those are CIA, DEA, FBI agents who tried to get the truth out about what was going on. If you doubt that, you need to get the books Defrauding America and Drugging America by Rodney Stitz, who actually got a chance to talk to many of these government agents who were sent to prison not because they'd done anything wrong, but because they wanted the American people to know what was really going on and who was the largest drug smuggler in the world. It certainly isn't Osama bin Laden. It's the CIA, always has been. Go ahead.
Somebody said the CIA stands for the Cocaine Import Agency.
The American people find that so difficult to believe. We have the Inspector General's report that came out after Gary Webb wrote his article, you know, about the CIA and the Iran-Contra hearings and certainly running drugs. And the Inspector General's report of the CIA acknowledged that the CIA was involved in drug smuggling, and not a word in the controlled media. But we have that report, as well as many other reports and even interviews with people who've been in government who are trying to get the truth out. But you go ahead.
So that's what happens when you believe, as Langdell did, that law is simply man-made. It's whatever the state, the one who has the most power and the most prisons and the most guns, whatever the state says it is, which is why, by the way, it's so important that our founders established the Second Amendment, because they knew the only way a tyrant is going to reign is when he disarms the people. And that's what the wicked people know today, which is why they're trying to disarm all America. Thirdly, Langdell taught that law evolves as man evolves. So you have this false view of man, that man is on this evolving track, you know, Darwinian anthropology and so on, and Darwinian psychology, that man's evolving to a higher state. Well, if man's improving and evolving, well, then, of course, the law has to improve and evolve, would be his argument. Fourthly, he said the judges are the guide to the evolution of law. And how do they guide the evolution of law? They do it by writing decisions. Of course, if you look at any Supreme Court or any other case from any court, right at the top, the title on the page is Opinion. This is an opinion. It's not law. And we know that no laws are to be made by the judicial branch. That's not at all their responsibility. Laws made in the legislative branch under the laws of nature and nature's God, and any law made by the legislative branch that violates the laws of nature and nature's God is no law at all. It's an ink blot, ink spilled on a piece of paper that is absolutely meaningless and worthless. Well, fifthly then, Langdell taught his students that in order to study the law in the new scientific way was to get to the original sources. That is, don't go back to the Constitution. Study instead the decisions of judges about the Constitution. And this is called the case law method of legal study, which in 99%+ of the law schools today is the only way law is studied. And so that's when you, as I've done, ask every lawyer I can encounter, you know, how did you study the Constitution? Did you actually read the text of the Constitution, study what the founders meant? Oh, no, we never did that. Well, how did you study the Constitution? We studied what the judges said the Constitution meant. We never studied the Constitution itself. And so the judge's opinion about the First Amendment and the Second Amendment is what they wind up studying in law school today. The result of this, because it began at Harvard, and of course as Harvard-trained lawyers, and some of those lawyers ultimately became professors in other law schools, the cancer of Langdell's legal positivism spread to 99-plus percentage of the law schools today do not teach law. And by the way, most Americans have very little respect for lawyers. I have some good friends who are lawyers, and I have respect for them because I know their legal principles are not these of legal positivism, but the principles of our founders. But that's a very, very, very small minority. Most people have a grave disrespect for lawyers in our country today because they know the lawyers really aren't following what is just. Why? They're not following God's law. They're violating God's law. And you go into the courtroom and you expect you're going to have your shirt taken off the back and you're going to be robbed and beaten and thrown out if you don't wind up in jail. And that's not justice, and most Americans know that's not justice. They know that our court system should not be called a justice system at all, but an injustice system. And if they're wise, they know they want to avoid this thing at all costs, to stay far away from it and ever have to darken the door as a plaintiff or to be dragged into a courtroom, because they know the system underway today, this legal positivism, has no absolutes, and it means those with the most guns, those with the prisons, are the ones who can control you at their whim to do whatever they want you to do, to steal from you, to take away your liberty or even your life, and you have no recourse because you don't have a system of justice or a system of appealing to any higher justice that's based upon God's law. True freedom comes when a people are following God's law. Jesus Christ is the author of liberty. And we're instructed in Galatians, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty with which Christ has set you free. And that's exactly what our founders were designing when they put together our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our Declaration, a system of government that was founded on God's law, would implement God's law in society, and prevent anyone from gaining the kind of power where they could violate your God-given right to life, liberty, or property. And we certainly talked before about how each of those major areas is violated by our government on the federal and state level today, where they'll steal your property. They steal from every one of us with the fractional reserve and the Federal Reserve System, all that garbage. They're stealing from us every day and taking away people's liberty unjustly, and, of course, taking millions, tens of millions, and maybe now up to 50 million life of the unborn in our land, unconstitutionally, illegally, in violation of God's law.
And, of course, there's a wonderful saying, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Our guest has been Pastor David Whitney. His website is www.iotconline.com. iotconline.com. Go there. Learn about the Institute. Get yourself a kit. Start teaching the Constitution. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, the result of this whole process of legal positivism that has a cancer that has infected the law schools, ultimately has infected most legislative branches on state and federal level, because most people who are elected to office are attorneys. They have been trained in this false view of law, and so it deeply infected our government in so many capacities, which is why, as you mentioned, Ron Paul, he's not an attorney. He didn't train as an attorney. He's a doctor. And he understands the law far better than most who have gone through law school, because they've had to swallow the lie in order to graduate from law school and pass a bar exam and all that junk. Well, the result of all this is a living constitution view of our Constitution. And they chose that term as a propaganda term because it sounds positive. Well, we don't want a dead constitution. Of course, we want a living constitution. What they mean by living constitution is that the Constitution changes, it evolves, and the judges are really not bound by the intent of the framers, but rather are free to give new meanings to the Constitution and create new rights that the Constitution never had, like the right to an abortion or the right to sodomy. That's not in the Constitution. It was created out of the perverted brains of black-robed lawyers. Well, when you have a living Constitution, you need to remind people, when they talk like that, that do you want a living mortgage contract with your bank? That is, you say you got a fixed rate for 30 years at whatever, say it's 10%. Or if you have a living contract with your mortgage company and next month they decide, we're going to collect 20% from you. You don't pay 20%, we're going to come take your house. You would scream and holler and you'd try to drag them into court because you'd say, wait a minute. We have a contract and the contract says 10% for 30 years. You can't change that contract unless I agree that you can change the contract. It takes two parties to enter this contract. You cannot change the contract unless you do it in the way specified by the contract. That's exactly what our Constitution is, which is why the living Constitution model is extremely dangerous, because if they say, we can change the meaning of the words of the Constitution, today you have a right to own property, tomorrow you don't have a right to own property. Today you have a due process in a court system where 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th Amendment protect you, and tomorrow, no, we'll just throw you in prison anytime we want, torture you, do whatever we want, and throw away the key, and you'll never see a judge, you'll never even be brought to trial.
And of course, that was what the Military Commission Act was all about, and the average individual doesn't understand what the implications of that. There are people in our government who don't want the right of habeas corpus, who wanted to give a free pass to anybody who'd ever tortured anybody and legalized torture. Well, we're out of time, David. God bless.
God bless.
Talk
to
you later.
Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just comment that certainly if you would want to understand what's happening to our courts, probably one of the best books is Betrayed by the Bench by John Stormer, who 40 years ago wrote a book entitled None Dare Call It Treason. John's a personal friend. Betrayed by the Bench is an important book. But my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will tell you why the Supreme Court took God out of our schools, and of course the reason that the Supreme Court did it was because they were controlled by the Masons, and in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1 from 1941 to 1971, and nobody's going to tell you that. So Brotherhood of Darkness and Betrayed by the Bench. If you'd like to know about the CIA and drugs, let me suggest a book written, it's called Into the Buzzsaw. There you'll find an essay by Gary Webb, who we're told committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. I think he was assassinated, as happens too so often to people who try to get the truth out. And then, of course, we have the book Defrauding America, Drugging America. We have two 4-tape sets. Is there really a war on drugs and the men we left behind? Because, of course, one reason for the Vietnam War was to facilitate the CIA drug smuggling. They need that money. They needed the money for their black operations all over the world. And then, of course, we have an excellent book called Kiss the Boys Goodbye. And it was written by Monica Jensen Stevenson. It was effectively suppressed. Now, all of our copies are used, but they're in pretty good shape, either hardbound or softbound. And you need to read the book. It was actively suppressed in America. And after Monica got the copyright back, she moved to Canada. It was reprinted by another publisher. Somebody came in, bought up the publisher, and just accidentally, shredded 5,000 copies of the book. Hitler burned books. Here we just shred them, or we suppress them by one means or another. But it is all the same spiritual force, because there is powerful occult forces working in Hitler's Germany. There are powerful occult forces working in America today. That's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is so important. Why you need to listen to my talk on the Forbidden Secret. Why you need to see the DVD. And, of course, Forbidden Secret is a DVD. You need to see the DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. Riddles in Stone, going into the architectural design of our nation's capital. The Atlantis Connection, which is a talk given by Chris Pinto, who put together the two previous DVDs. Now, the Atlantis Connection is something we produce. It's certainly not of the quality of Secret Mysteries, but it has the material in it to understand that America was to become the new Atlantis and to lead the world into the new world order and the new world religion with the new world leader. And then, of course, the other DVD we produced that a year ago was entitled The Emergence. It's the story of the coming world leader. It's put out by Constance Cumby. Certainly, I believe the world's leading expert on the occult and the New World Order, and a woman I'm very, very glad to have as a friend. So that would be The Atlantis Connection, The Emergence, and then, of course, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone. We do hope, of course, that many of you out there will want to get our material. You can go to our website. You can see many of these DVDs for nothing. And, of course, we make them available there for people who really can't afford them. We do hope that, of course, you'll want to buy some, but if you can't afford them, they're available on our website at radioliberty.com. And then you can pull down our newsletters. You can listen to our programs there 9 hours a day live. Listen to our archive programs or MP3. Encourage others to listen. Please pray for Ron Paul for his protection. And then pray for Radio Liberty, my ministry, for our provision and for our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.